RCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. In Saudi Arabia, U.S. and Russian delegations are wrapping up talks about ending the war in Ukraine. Not at the table and not included in the talks, anyone from Ukraine. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz says all parties will be included, including European nations.
The facts will continue to push back on this notion that our allies haven't been consulted. They are being consulted literally almost on a daily basis, and will continue to do so.
A top Hamas leader says a group will release 6 living Israeli hostages and the bodies of 4 others this week. The 6 are the last living hostages to be freed under the ceasefire's first phase. Harsh cold is descending on the upper plains and northern Rockies on the heels of weekend storms that pummeled the southeast with flooding that killed more than a dozen people in Kentucky. In Toronto, they're getting ready to brief reporters on the plane that landed upside down last night. Everyone on board survived. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Wisconsin State Senate is once again considering postpartum care. The bill would give low-income mothers a full year of postpartum Medicaid coverage, as opposed to the 60 days currently allowed. State Senator Sarah Kieski of the 14th State Senate District is a co-author of the bill. She explained to Phil Nee on WRCO's morning show why it is important to everyone.
What we know is postpartum care, the needs aren't only in the first 60 days for the mom. And we need healthy moms so that we have healthy kids. So if they have a medical issue, if they have a mental health issue, those need to be treated well so that we have them functioning well, both for themselves, for their newborn and any other children, or maybe their workplace. There are many things that happen postpartum that have an impact, and some of them are just not going to show up in the first 60 days. So having access to this is really, really important.
She adds it is supported by both parties, but one person seems to be holding it up.
Last session, this bill was presented in the Senate and it was passed 32-1. So bipartisan support. We are hoping that it comes to the floor again in the Senate and in the Assembly. One of the big issues is there is the leader of the Assembly. His name is Robin Voss, the representative, that has said it is unlikely that this bill will be seen on that floor.
Kieski has a fundamental issue with Voss's stance.
I believe if we are the voice of our constituents, there are 132 of us total, 99 Assembly members, 33 Senate members. We should all get to vote on something that is this important. But we have one person right now that is standing in the way for even it being presented to a floor.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
A rematch against Illinois. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers host the Fighting Illini. The last time these two teams met, Illinois won by 6. The Badgers now ranked 11th in the nation. Head coach Greg Gard.
You know, I know we've gotten a lot better, but obviously here's the, you know, somebody that got us the first round. And what can we do better to take away the things that they did really well the first time? And offensive rebounding for them was something they emphasized, and they were really good at it that night.
NFL, the Packers need to make decisions on free agents like center Josh Myers, kicker Brandon McManus. Today is the first day teams can use the franchise tag. Baseball spring training, Brewers' new lefty Nestor Cortez talked about his elbow injury.
So I started throwing in like mid-December. Those first 2-3 weeks are like growing pains and knowing that you're a little sore, but I feel like I have a good sense of what's sore and what's pain. You know, turn some heads and keep going forward.
That's the Brewers' new left-handed pitcher Nestor Cortez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Feeling very frigid today with high temperatures only climbing to the single digits. And with breezy winds, it'll keep us feeling well sub-zero. And tonight, another cold weather advisory goes into effect, where we'll be dipping to feeling like 25 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 3 below 0.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
We are born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Dom Salvia.
Next time on Overtime with Maggie Dunn, do we really need to know what's going on with avian flu? Also, should pardons of the January 6th rioters apply to murder plots and child porn charges? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter after the 11:30 news. We will lighten it up as we always do, take a little break from the serious things. And we like to call it audio sorbet. So at 11:30, we want to hear from you about what movie are you embarrassed to admit that you liked? We all have one. We know you have one. So we want to hear from you after the 11:30 news. We'll wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the I've Got My Eye on You edition. If you ever have a thing that you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays at civicmedia.us. And don't forget, it is primary election day. So please, the polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight. Go and cast your ballots. We're all going to have the same race on our ballot to head the, it's the primary for the head of the Department of Public Instruction. There are three folks on the ballot. Two will be moving forward to April 1st. Right now, we are joined by James Vanderloo, who is the head of the Milwaukee branch of OEC Group. He's back again. Thank you so much, James, for being willing to come back on the show.
Hey, Jane, Greg, and Calvin, good morning. I don't want to be the negative Grim Reaper of tariffs every time, so I'm glad you guys are talking about some lighter things when I get off speaking with you all. But no, definitely glad to be back. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's so important that folks understand tariffs. And I have been criticized for being elitist and condescending for having people on to explain how tariffs work. And my excuse is I didn't understand how tariffs worked, which is why we have experts on to explain the things that we do not understand. So I think the message, James, is finally getting through that tariffs are a tax on the consumer. Or are we not there yet?
I think we're definitely getting there. The voices that were sort of in opposed to that have been pretty much silenced, I think, in the last few weeks. It's sort of everyone's agreeing that, and I think even within the current administration, that, yeah, there's going to be some pain points. There's going to be higher prices. Now, whether how long this is going to last or what the temporary fix is, I think, is the big thing to debate right now. But yeah, it is going to cost people more money if any of these tariffs kind of go through. And not only that, but the additional costs that go along with just kind of having this chaotic market conditions. Those are things that don't really get talked about in the addition of price increases.
Is there, so we hear when it comes to tariffs, we hear 25%, we've heard 100%, we've heard 1,000, we've heard all these numbers coming out of the current administration. Is there, when people hear just regular talk about tariffs on the products we get from overseas, is there an average number that people should have in their mind where then they hear 25%, they can go, "Gah, that's a lot." Or is it, I mean, is it just such a fluctuation that there's not really an average to remember?
It's a really good question. I think you see in a lot of cases, you know, tariffs are not something that we've historically used. A lot of times other countries do use tariffs upon us. A 10% tariff will typically raise the price of your goods anywhere from like 5 to 10%. Typically what happens is when a company receives that tariff, they don't normally increase it like one-to-one in terms of what they're offering the customer. Because there's so many other inputs, because there's so many other factors that go into the pricing of it. When you hear things like 25% tariffs, that's in a way a very game-changing. It also really depends on what the initial tariff was. If you have something that's already had a 10% tariff, now you're looking at a 35% tariff. And it jumps up pretty quickly on that. And then a lot of the customers are reshuffling. And I think that's really based off my conversations. And I do have to say, I speak with people from all angles and all political spectrums and things like that for people who are importing things. And really the biggest thing is that it's very, very difficult to plan, because really the thing that you tell people is, well, just plan for anything and everything to possibly happen. And, you know, whatever country, you never know, it could be this tomorrow and this today. Yeah. When we were sending out notices, because we're trying to stay on top of this as quickly as possible, even within the day, we had to send like 3 different updates as to sort of the information that's happening in real time. So when you get to that 25% range, I think all companies, regardless of what you're importing from, that's going to be a significant increase on the cost of goods. I would say at least probably 10%. But anything beyond a 25%, that then you're talking even more cataclysmic than the other. 10% is going to hurt, but it's in some ways doable. But again, when that's tied on to China tariffs, which were already up at 25-30%, now you're looking at like a 40% tariff, and that obviously hurts people bringing up any goods coming in.
That's what I wanted to clarify too, as a follow up. What I heard is if there is a 10% tariff on a widget, if they say, well, okay, we're going to 25% tariff, that then makes it 35%, because it goes on the existing, it just doesn't raise it.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So there are some cases where there are some exemptions. There are certain commodities that you can bring in that are exempt from the tariffs, but in almost every case, and I will say that we haven't necessarily been given a comprehensive data or list of what applies, just a casting a wide net over these things.
Color me shocked,
but yeah,
James.
In most cases, yeah, it just gets added on to whatever tariff is already imposed upon it.
If you're just joining us, James Vanderloo is our guest. He heads up the Milwaukee branch of the OEC group. James, for people who don't know what OEC does, can you explain that and why it is you are so familiar with the subject of tariffs?
Sure. So we do anything international shipping. So, I mean, you know, historically it's been a lot of importing, but we do a lot of exporting, deal with local manufacturers on how to be compliant, bring things, you know, making sure we're bringing in things appropriately, making sure we're working with all the government institutions to make sure that our importers and exporters are kind of working with, you know, within the global landscape. So yeah, we've had to stay on top of this, just because it's a job hazard, and it's kind of one of those things that everyone's going to be asking about. And really, if you kind of don't comply with it, the complications can be very severe. You hear everything, it changes every day, but what we don't realize is that these have very dire consequences for businesses who are looking to, you know, grow exports. There's a huge manufacturing base here in Wisconsin, and I know that a lot of them are looking at, you know, where can we grow to? What other markets can we go into? And I know that this is kind of like putting a hindrance on some of their planning going forward.
Businesses love uncertainty.
You got that right. No, that's the biggest thing. And again, I wish we knew maybe a little bit more finitely. I've heard this say that maybe this is just a tactic to work on trade agreements. Who knows? Again, at the end of the day, the markets haven't really had time to absorb it. So you're not really seeing it affect like stock markets necessarily. There is a percentage of the stock market that deals with like consumer confidence and how people are sort of feeling. And I think that uncertainty is probably going to negative affect it here in the short term. But until we kind of have a 3 to 6 month issuance of those tariffs and how they interact, we won't really see the economic impact for some time.
If one of the times that you were on before, you explained how it seems like Trump's idea behind these tariffs is to bring manufacturing back to this country. We shouldn't have to import anything from anybody else. We should be able to do it all here, which is great in theory, but this takes years to do. It's not like we stop importing something from China or Mexico or Canada, and the next day a supplier in the U.S. is set up to handle that. That's not how it works, is it?
No, not at all. A lot of these things will take, you know, probably at least 10 years. Some of the stuff that you could do that maybe doesn't, maybe takes 3 to 4 years is like maybe like lithium refining and different things like that. But then you have to ask yourself, like, is that an industry that we want here? It's a very messy, a lot of these things are very messy and can be dirty jobs. Not that they're not, you know, not that they're not valuable jobs, but it's like if someone else is willing to take this on and we're able to trade them, you know, at a specific rate that works from a business standpoint, is that something that we want to do? So it's you know, a lot of manufacturing coming back would be good, but do we want all of it? And what kind of specific ones can be accomplished within that small period of time? That does a lot. And I know a lot of the things were tied to like the decrease of like possibly income tax and then the increase of tariffs, but it doesn't really make too much sense to me because if the goal is to increase tariffs and therefore increase the amount of manufacturing and therefore decrease the amount of tariffs, at some point that doesn't pay for itself. And you have to bring taxing back into the mix because then you don't have as many tariffs coming in. So again, I don't really know how the math works out. It's definitely a troubling thing, but yeah, even if we wanted to bring back manufacturing, even with the past tariffs, we didn't see that huge of an increase of manufacturing moving back overseas.
And aren't there things that we simply cannot make? I mean, there are minerals that we get from other countries we don't have.
And that was one of the things that happened. So China instituted a 15% retaliatory tax on like our crude oil, coal, and things like that. And they are one of the largest importers. They're looking at places like Canada now, and actually one of the other parts of that is the export control. So they've stopped you know, letting out certain rare earth minerals, stopped exporting those kind of things. So yeah, they're definitely going to take advantage of the situation. You know, there's going to be probably some retaliatory talks. Right now we're already seeing tourism from Canada go down as a direct result of the tariff negotiations. So again, it's all these unintended consequences that sort of add up and really paint the bigger picture. And again, we don't really have we won't know that until later down the line.
I this is more of a statement, and I don't know what your feelings are, James, on this. Is I don't understand a country that he praises, Xi Jinping in China, he then makes them suffer with tariffs and they retaliate right. But it doesn't, I'm not a smart human being, but this doesn't seem like smart global trade behavior to undercut the country that you're saying, but your leader is so good. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and yeah, and there's lots of things that they can do as they have a little bit more centralized economy. They can fluctuate their currency to make it work out better for the math to work. And again, we always have to remember it's not the Chinese government that pays the tariff. It's the companies here, yeah, in the United States. So all of those goods that we've grown accustomed to, you know, certain things like that, they're going to increase in price, and you know, we can't take that for granted.
We're to continue our conversation with James Vanderloo, the head of the Milwaukee branch of the OEC Group. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In September 2024, Arizona Secretary of State Adrian Fontes announced an error in state voter rolls involving 97,000 voters, revolving around a state DMV data error. The number has risen to nearly 200,000, and an easy fix still hasn't been found. In 1996, Arizona began requiring proof of citizenship when obtaining a driver's license. Since 2005, election officials have asked registered voters with licenses issued before 1996 for proof of citizenship. But if a driver's license issued before 1996 needed to be replaced, it was accidentally given a new date of issue, and election officials never knew to ask for citizenship documents. VoteBeat Arizona and the Arizona Mirror report that the investigation is ongoing, but that the number affected has now ballooned to 200,000 voters. The Arizona Supreme Court allowed affected voters to vote in November's election, but now the legislature is considering an emergency measure, House Bill 2038, directing election officials to contact the voters and request citizenship documents. If not supplied within 35 days, the voter's status would change to not registered, though voters could reactivate their registration by providing documentation right up to Election Day. After the 2026 general election, those voters would be dropped. We have text of the bill and VoteBeat's reporting linked at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Board Lord, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. If you're just joining us, James Vanderloo is our guest. He heads the Milwaukee branch of the OEC group, and we're talking tariffs and what this is going to mean for all of us going forward. I found an article, James, just about what Wisconsin exports. Wisconsin exports exceed $28 billion every year. Our main categories, machinery, computer and electronic products, transportation equipment, chemicals, processed foods. Our biggest trading partners, the top three, are Canada, Mexico, and China. And I remember under the last Trump administration, and he did the tariffs again, our farmers, Wisconsin farmers, got hit really, really hard, especially our soybean farmers.
Yeah, that's correct. And there were alternative sources such as Brazil and some of these other countries that tend to, be more cooperative. So there's a lot more alternatives than there have been in the past. Additionally, Wisconsin is known worldwide for its ginseng, which is something that maybe a lot of people don't know about. It's considered very, very valuable in China. And you'd have to think that, you know, there might be some retaliatory measures against those producers as well. Similarly, Wisconsin dairy and cheese has really never been more marketable, has never had a higher demand. And you kind of wonder, you know, is that going to be another instance that's hurt? You're crippling two major industries right there, just kind of off the top of the head. And it's something that they could easily go after because there are alternative sources. Whether or not the quality is as good, you know, I'll definitely leave up to the other people. But I certainly think we've got some pretty good stuff here. So, well, yeah, that's something that you watch out for.
And James, then you also run the risk, you know, if our farmers find it harder, these markets don't want to take Wisconsin dairy products or Wisconsin soybeans or Wisconsin ginseng, and they go to another country to get that, why would they come back to us? They found a different source. Why should they come back?
And that's a great point. And then, like, let's say, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we have a different regime in charge. We kind of go back to the things were. Now we've given them a higher level to negotiate and maybe make it more difficult on the farmers or on the people on the back end of that, even if they were to come back. It's playing with it. It's playing a dangerous game. We don't necessarily understand all the consequences. And the problem is just it's not really focused. You're just kind of clubbing at anyone and everyone around, friend and foe alike. And so I think that's kind of one of the things where, you know, it makes it difficult to predict what's going on. And also it makes it easier for there to be a lot of unintended consequences that happen as a result of it.
We have a caller. We're screening a caller. We have Cindy from Appleton on the line right now. Cindy, do you have a question for James?
I do. Well, first of all, I don't think we'll ever have another regime, to your point you just made. But the last time this happened, the administration of the felon gave billions of dollars to the farmers in subsidies to help them, you know, stave off their losses. So that's what's going to happen again, and we the people will get double whammied with having to pay higher prices and also having to bail out the farmers.
Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a great point. Again, it goes back to these like these things that aren't just related to specifically the price of the tariff. There's all of these additional things. And yes, subsidizing the farmers was a strategy that we had to use. And in, I do believe in cases where, you know, certain industries of the in agriculture are affected, we'll probably have to do the same thing to keep them afloat. It's not very popular to put your farmers out to pasture like that.
No. But at the same time, we've talked to enough farmers. They don't like getting handouts. They don't want help. They want to run their farms the way they see best and be rewarded for the work that they do. I just think this runs counter purposes to their own goal and their own satisfaction.
Oh, sure. I completely agree with you. And you know, that's, you know, there's some great things, you know, that you're robbing the people of their integrity of work. And that's kind of another kind of a rough thing. And I totally agree with you. I think that's the thing, is they would much prefer to just farm like normal. You know, those subsidies are really only used if you have a bad, if there's bad crop or you have insurance, or, you know, if things happen that are sort of outside your control or that kind of happen as a result of some natural event or something like that, not necessarily the policies that are dictated by your own government that are kind of working against you. So yeah, it's, you know, I'm always thinking with all these tariffs, the small business owner and the farmer, those are the people that are going to be at the most risk and have the most, you know, the most issues with any kind of increase in tariff.
And they have the slimmest margin of survival too.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And you're starting to see layoffs. You're starting to see other things kind of in the, you know, the media going forward. So you hope this just isn't the beginning of the snowball that rolls downhill. But again, you know, I want to try to have some some positive aspect of it.
Yeah.
I do think this opens up opportunities for maybe exporters to look at less conventional markets like Africa, a different place like that, and at least kind of look and research and see if there is, you know, maybe there's going to be a more ideal situation in some of these other countries than in the past. So that's kind of the one good thing I guess I could say of it without making it too depressing.
You were upset. You were nervous about being the scary tariff guy. We're finding solutions. We're finding problems to be solved. It's great stuff, James.
No, hey, it's, you know, all these problems, you know, we'll have to deal with it. They weren't things that maybe all of us were asking for. And I think a lot of people are starting to learn more about what all this means at the end. And so, you know, like I said, we have to kind of keep moving, keep our heads up, and keep working for our clients and people like here in Wisconsin.
Well, we really appreciate your insight and your expertise and your willing to join the show and help us wade through this. I hope you will come back on again. James Vanderloo is the head of the Milwaukee branch of the OEC Group. James, thank you so very much for your time. Very much appreciated.
Great speaking with you. Have a nice rest of your day.
Take it
you
James.
As well. News is coming up next, and then we'll lighten it up. Audio Sorbet, what's your favorite movie? You're embarrassed to admit that you like. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. It's National FFA Week, a time to recognize the important role of the National FFA organization in developing the next generation of leaders who will change the world and celebrating the 90th anniversary of New Farmers of America and the 75th anniversary of the Federal Charter to Future Farmers of America. Each year, FFA chapters around the country celebrate National FFA Week. There are 261 state chapters in Wisconsin, broken into 10 sections. Tyson Gerke, a graduate of Fenimore High School, serves as the treasurer for the Wisconsin State FFA chapter. He represents Section 4, which covers Southwest Wisconsin with 27 FFA chapters. What would he tell someone contemplating joining their local FFA chapter?
I would tell them it never hurts to try something new. And second off, there's a spot in an FFA for everyone. Even if they are not considering a career in agriculture, joining FFA can give them various leadership skills, such as attending leadership conferences that they can enhance their speaking ability. And frankly, I credit a lot of my ability to public speak to being involved in FFA and joining these speaking contests. And so even if you aren't looking for a career in agriculture, joining FFA, there's an avenue for you to grow as a person, and there's an avenue for you to grow individually and make the most of your high school years.
Jumping into the state level was not a first choice for Gerke.
My senior year of high school, I served as my chapter's middle school advisor. While serving as a middle school advisor, I had the opportunity to meet frequently with our middle school members. I had the opportunity to coach our middle school members and mentor our middle school members. And that really gave me a perspective on how I can make a difference in the lives of others.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Sometimes Marvel movies are review-proof, such is the case with Captain America: Brave New World, which was number one at the box office this past weekend. Despite mediocre reviews, the franchise flick pulled in $192 million at the worldwide box office to lead the way. Theater owners in the U.S. were particularly happy, as the fourth Captain America film brought in about $100 million domestically. Not bad for February. The other big film opening this weekend was Paddington in Peru. The third installment in the popular Paddington franchise finished in second place, bringing in $13 million at the box office. Paddington will probably find a bigger audience when it goes to streaming and VOD. Sony Pictures' Heart Eyes took in about $10 million in its second weekend to finish in third place, and it was Mufasa the Lion King holding steady in fifth place during its ninth week of release with $4.2 million. Starting to think I'm the only person that hasn't seen this movie. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Feeling very frigid today with high temperatures only climbing to the single digits. And with breezy winds, it'll keep us feeling well sub-zero. And tonight, another cold weather advisory goes into effect, where we'll be dipping to feeling like 25 below. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 1 below 0.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Chicago-based comedian Jim Flanagan and veterans advocate and founder of Arizona Warriors, Jason Moon, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach, and our resident young person, Calvin, on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, it is primary election day. The polls are open. You have until 8 p.m. to go cast your ballot. The one statewide race you will see, there are three candidates running to be the head of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Jill Underle, who is the incumbent, facing against two others after today's election. Two will move forward to the April 1st election. It's an important race. Every election is important. If you hadn't voted yet, if you're not sure if you're even registered yet, Greg Bach, where could they go to find out said information?
Well, thank you, Jay. They can go to myvote.wi.gov. You're going to plug in your home address. You're going to find whether or not you're registered. You can also find out where your polling place is, because sometimes they do move. And you can also even see what's on your sample ballot. So you, if you haven't voted but you don't know much about any candidates on your ballot, you can take a look at it. You can do some research, and then you can go to your polling place, cast your ballot, and you're good to go. But that's myvote.wi.gov for all your voting information.
And if you have any questions about the candidates, Dan Schaefer was on from the recombobulation area, and I posted this on my Blue Sky account as well. We talked about the three people who are running for the race. Yeah. You can find that in the archives. You can find archives of our previous shows at civicmedia.us. Click on shows at the top, go to Matinee on Air, and then that will take you to, we have at least 100 previous shows that you can listen to. So if you still have questions about who you want to cast your ballot for to head up Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, I highly encourage you to take a look at that segment with Dan Schaefer. It's only about 10, 15 minutes long, so it'll go by quickly.
Yeah, but it's informative too.
It is informative. All right, we're going to do a little audio sorbet segment. We spend a lot of time talking about very heavy things. Trust me. Oh, nice.
I tried so hard to get that in.
Nice gliss. Our audio sorbet segment where we look at some lighter things just to take a breath and share a couple of laughs. So here is today's question for you. What movie are you embarrassed to admit that you like? And I think we all have one, if not two.
Yeah.
What movie are you embarrassed to admit that you like? 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on a live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. What movie are you embarrassed to admit that you like? Judgment Free Zone.
Judgment for Call now. In. Judgment for now. Free zone. After we get off the air, the judgment.
Well, you can do that with our picks too, because we all have one.
Yeah.
So we're gonna spill our guts and share with you the movies that we're embarrassed to admit that we like. Who wants to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I want you to go first, Jane.
Okay. I like Mommy Dearest.
Yeah. Why would you be embarrassed by that movie?
Because it is among the list of the worst movies ever made.
Really? I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
you can look. It is Mommy Dearest starring Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
I want to say it was the early 90s.
No.
Was it earlier than that?
Yeah, I think Mommy Dearest came out way before then.
Way before that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that is a movie that if it's ever on cable, I cannot not watch it.
Yeah.
Just because of Faye Dunaway's makeup.
Oh, yeah.
They did such a good job of turning her into Joan Crawford. It's kind of creepy.
So the movie came out in 1981, and I have never seen the film, but I know the film because you hear it referenced in all sorts of media now, especially for one scene for which I've pulled the clip. Calvin, can you give us the clip for Mommy Dearest that everybody knows?
No! What's wire hangers doing in this closet when I told you no wire hangers ever?
And the
Joan didn't like woo. She had a thing about hangers, man. Wow.
That clip is like 5 minutes long, and I was like, how much? I'm just like, no, just get sweet, to the point, get in and get out. But yeah, apparently Joni had a problem with her daughter putting these $200 dresses they were talking about on wire
hangers. She's like 9 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a weird, but I didn't realize it was considered one of the worst movies. I thought it was considered one of the best because people, especially back in the 80s and 90s, couldn't shut up about it.
There's something that's so camp about it. I think that's one of the reasons why it is on a list of the worst movies ever made. So that is my shameful admittance. If I see a Mommy Dearest on anything, it's like, oh yeah, I am so watching that.
Tom on the live stream says, don't be embarrassed by that. Mommy Dearest was great.
It was something.
Yeah,
it was something.
It was definitely a movie that happened. Calvin, do you want to go for yours? You want me to go?
I can go.
Okay.
I'll lead off with my clip before I reveal the movie.
Okay.
Great.
This is what I am.
You're beautiful.
That was it? Oh wow! This is like name that too,
it
but you get like
have been it. Well, it's Twilight. To be honest with you, I never really was a fan of the movies, but I read the books when I was probably way too young. I begged my mom to let me read them, and she did. And I enjoyed them. They're pretty good. For what they are. I also was, again, too young to be reading them, and my threshold of what is a good book probably wasn't as high. I would think I was in fifth or sixth grade.
Oh wow.
Calvin, would you read how long is a Twilight book? How many pages?
300 to 400 probably.
Would you be willing to read one of them again and just kind of give us a like then and now?
I think there's more trendy things in the genre that I'd be more willing to read, but yeah, I guess.
I would love to hear. I love to hear young Calvin versus older Calvin's take on Twilight.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah,
Calvin, that is just perfect. We would love to hear from you. What movie are you embarrassed to admit that you liked? You can tell us.
You can tell us.
We're not going to tell anybody.
We got
Liz.
Oh, go on.
Go ahead.
I was going to say
Sockville. Liz from Sockville, texting and listening on WAUK. I love the Sex and the City movies and the series. Yeah, the Sex and the City movies for people who were fans of the series can be very controversial.
I loved the first Sex and the City movie. It was wonderful. The second one, I was so mad I paid money to see it.
So was I.
So angry. And the person I was dating at the time was like, do you want to go now? I'm like, no, I'm in this. I've paid. There might be some sort of respite or
redemption.
Some redemption. No. And even what I love, though, is even the people in the movie recognize that the second one sucked.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because I was the same way. I was angry by the time I got out of that movie.
Yeah, it was just such a disappointing film. We got Whistler from Richland Center on the phone right now. Whistler, what is a movie that you love that you would be embarrassed to tell people about?
For me, I think it would have to be Driving Miss Daisy.
That's a fine film.
That's a great movie.
You got good taste in film, Whistler.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome, but not many people know that I enjoyed that a whole hell of a lot.
Is it one of those movies, Whistler, where you can't tell your buddies in the garage, you're like, you know what movie I really like? Crack open a beer. I love Driving Miss Daisy. Glug, glug, glug.
Yeah, that's about right.
All right,
that's about right.
Whistler, we appreciate you coming to us in this judgment-free zone, Don't Sue Me, Planet Fitness, and telling us about your favorite movie that you are embarrassed about. Thank you so much for calling,
Whistler. You have no reason to be embarrassed about liking Driving Miss Daisy, Whistler.
Exactly.
That's a great, great film. But it's like I can see where some of your guy buddies might be like, but there's no shooting, there's no guns. It's a very sweet film about a relationship between two people.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So yeah, we're behind you, Whistler. We got you. Thanks for calling. Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Mark, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Please tell us what movie that you love that you'd be embarrassed to tell people.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily love it. I'm supposed to be embarrassed for liking Madame Web. I mean, I just don't understand the big beef about it. I mean, that people said, well, it's just so horrible. And I actually enjoyed it. I mean, that I guess my expectations weren't high enough. And, you know, I actually enjoyed the movie. It wasn't the best of the franchise, but I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Oh, Mark.
No shame in that, Mark. Don't you dare judge him, Greg Bach.
Mark.
Don't you dare judge him. This is judgment-free zone.
Mark.
There's no shame. No shame.
Mark, all opinions are welcome here in the judgment-free zone of what movies you love that you were embarrassed to say. But he's not embarrassed, though. That's the thing. Mark's not embarrassed. I can tell him why that movie is terrible from start to finish, but I won't.
For those of us who do not know, what is Madam Web?
Madam Web, okay, so I'll make it really quick. You know the Spider-Man movies, and they've rebooted the Spider-Man movies a few times. There have been three Spider-Mans. Spider-Man. There have been three Spider-Men, and Madam Web is a movie along with Morbius and Venom that are part of the universe of Spider-Man. They've made movies. They've made movies about these characters. They're all his villains, enemies. Spider-Man is nowhere near these films. Spider-Man is not mentioned barely at all in these films. And they, with the exception of two of the Venom movies, have universal acclaim of being awful.
Oh, wow.
It is just a money grab from Sony Pictures, who owns the rights to Spider-Man, because Marvel makes Spider-Man movies better. That's just how it goes. But yeah, they're like, we're going to put out this movie. And everyone's like, why? No one asked. We're like, too bad. Here it comes. And everyone hates it. Calvin, I know you have an opinion.
Well, I actually haven't seen the movie, but from being chronically online when the movie came out, Dakota Johnson in the press tour leading up to that, it was funny, but you almost felt bad for her because you could tell she hated every part about the movie, of being in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everyone made fun of that movie. Sydney Sweeney did that movie just so she could get a passion project movie done, because she's like, she has no interest in that movie. Yeah. Mark, I understand. If you enjoyed it, mazel tov. Good on you, man. That's fine. There are movies that I like that people don't like as well. I'm judgment free, but I can sit here and tell you why it's terrible.
Couple of comments on the live stream I wanted to share before we get to Greg's, because we're going to run out of time. Tom says, Jack and Jill with Adam Sandler. I love that film. Cassandra says, yes, all the Twilight movies. Also from Cassandra, National Treasure. It's not great on the history, which isn't why I like it, but I can't explain why I like it. You don't have to explain
it. You don't have to.
You liked it.
No, there's no. You liked it. And that's all we need here at the judgment-free zone. Don't sue us, Planet Fitness area of Matt and Aaron Air. Movies you love but are embarrassed to tell people. My movie is very simple. It's The Princess Bride, but it was when I saw it when I was a little boy. If you're familiar with the movie, there's a little boy who gets a book read to him, which is The Princess Bride, and he doesn't want to hear it because it's full of kissing and princesses and all
that. Is this a kissing book?
When my mom rented that movie, I was like, I don't want to watch this. This is with princesses. What? By the end of it, I was Fred Savage. Like, let's watch it again. Can we watch? And I pulled a clip from my favorite part of the movie. Calvin, can you play that? It's very short.
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream. Then love, true love, will follow you forever.
Skip to the end.
Have you the wing?
Man and wife. Say man and wife.
Man and wife.
The Princess Bride, one of the most quotable movies on the planet. There is not a bad scene in that film. That
Absolutely.
Is a great, great film. Just about out of time. When we return, we're going to wrap everything up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I've Got My Eye on You edition. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park. Zip lining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it. From pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
USA Today's Reader's Choice Awards named Chula Vista one of America's top 10 indoor water parks. Find out why at ChulaVistaResort.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Believe it or not, it is once again time for Wisconsinites to head to the polls and vote. I know, we all have a bit of election fatigue after 2024, but the spring election primary is coming up on Tuesday, February 18th. One race that will be on every ballot statewide for the spring primary is for state superintendent. Incumbent Jill Underley is seeking another term, and two candidates are challenging her. Jeff Wright, superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, and Brittany Kinzer, an education consultant and former charter school executive. Kinzer's candidacy, in particular, is gaining steam. Her campaign reported raising more than $500,000, far more than what Underley or Wright have brought in. With that type of financial support, this could prove to be a more competitive race for state superintendent than what we've seen in quite some time. This is becoming a real race to watch.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream, on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform shedding more users than a molting parrot. Coming up, afternoon news. Todd Alba will take over from noon to 2 p.m., and you can catch Todd tonight. He is going to be hosting. Governor Evers has his biannual budget address that will be at 7 p.m. tonight. And you can catch that across the Civic Media Radio Network starting at 7 p.m. with our friend and colleague, Todd Alba. Right before we went to the break, we were taking your calls, trying to lighten things up just a little bit about movies you like that you're embarrassed to admit that you like them.
Yeah.
Shared all of ours. We had some great texts that I wanted to get to before we wrap it up with Tisbat. Matt from Richland Center says he liked Freddy Got Fingered.
Tom Green classic. Oh, yeah.
Tom Green, that's who it was. Yep. I was trying to think of who it was. The movie I love that everyone hates is Joe Versus the Volcano. I love Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in that flick. Brain Fog cracks me up.
That one has come back. People mention that one more often now. I think that qualifies as a cult classic.
Joe and the Volcano.
Yeah.
Don't be ashamed. Nope. Scott from Shorewood says the Sister Act movies. Great. Both of them were great.
Why are we embarrassed?
I thought those were both great movies.
Yeah.
Ross from Crawford County listening on WRCE. My favorite movie I'm afraid to admit to liking is Pet Detective with Jim Carrey. I haven't seen it in a while, but that movie still cracks me up. But it is stupid.
No judgment here. Nor are we disagreeing. I love that movie, too. I've seen both of them. I saw them both in the theater.
Oh, that's great. Terry from Wausau, As Good As It Gets. I love that movie with Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt.
Yep.
Great, great film.
Yeah.
Mark from Prairie du Sac. The first time I saw The Princess Bride, I thought, oh, this is okay, but it has grown on me. It's a great, everyone can watch
it. It's a beautiful film. Remake it, Hollywood. Never.
Oh, please don't ever remake The Princess Bride. That would be a travesty.
Yeah, agreed.
It absolutely would. All right, we're going to run out of time. 11:54, Calvin. That means it is time for
This shouldn't be a thing.
Again, if you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This is from Oddity Central. Headline reads, doctors find five contact lenses lost behind woman's eyeball. A team of Chinese plastic surgeons recently reported the bizarre case of a 33-year-old woman who had lost no less than five contact lenses behind her left eye. Yeah, the initial exam found that the left side of her face was atrophied and her left eyeball was sunken. After carefully examining her, they decided to do some kind of grafting technique. What they did not count on was finding not one, but five different contact lenses in the empty space behind her eyeball. She told doctors she had lost several lenses in the past months, but never imagined they were stuck in her eye. Where did she think they went?
I don't know. Cleveland? No clue. It's like, that has to be, I mean, even when it just goes back a little bit in your eye, it irritates you. How they can just get lost back there and you don't go to the I am honestly, like, I am almost speechless by this. All I can say is glasses.
I tried contact lenses. I couldn't do it. Oh. I could not do the finger in the eye. I couldn't do it.
Can I tell you a very quick story? My one and only time with contacts.
Yes.
When got contacts, my sister said the guy at the place would give me a lesson. He was very mean and didn't want to do it, so he gave me one anyways. And then I took it home. It took me 2 hours to put the first contact in, another hour to put the second contact in. Then they said, just keep it in there for like an hour or two. Just let your eyeball get used to it, then take them out. It took me 3 hours to remove the one contact, and I went to bed with the other one in because I couldn't get it out. My eyes were red and just absolutely irritated. The skin was dry. So the next morning, my sister goes, all right, I'm going to take care of this for you. She sat me down on the toilet. She said, open your eye. And like a ninja, wham, just took it out. Never again. Never again, listening public. Contacts are the work of the devil.
Calvin?
I wore contacts from the time I was in eighth grade until my sophomore year of college. And then I switched to glasses just like for a fashion statement. And now that I've not been wearing contacts for like 5 years, when I do wear them on the rare occasion, like when I go swimming or something, taking them out is a nightmare.
Oh, it is. But I know that, like, Bridget, my wife, she wears contacts. It's just
lots of people do.
It's easy. Before I can even say anything, they're out. And me, I'm sitting there, eyelids open, pressing against my eye, and just the tears ran out.
The more you do like, they release from your eye better. Like, when I was wearing them every day, it was like that for me. But now that I haven't been wearing them, when I do put them in, they're, like, cemented in.
Yeah, and for me, it was like I was running away from my own finger. You know, it's like I'm trying to put it in, and it's like, no, I don't want it. No, I don't want it. So anyway, if your contact wearer is good for you, you have a skill set. Apparently, the three of us lack.
Yep.
But just be careful with those things. Make sure you know where they are when they go. That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
I am off tomorrow. I have jury duty. So Greg Bach will be taking over and be sitting in the big chair. Thank you for handling that. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and texting and listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today. Stay warm and you have the chance to share it. Keep it here. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you later.
News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Luke Mathers will be here for a little Tuesday Tangents with Luke, and we'll preview Governor Evers' budget address. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. In Saudi Arabia, high-level talks between the U.S. and Russia today focusing on ending the war in Ukraine. ABC's Ian Panel says Ukraine and U.S. allies were not invited.
U.S. and Russian officials face-to-face across the conference table. Secretary of State Marco Rubio leading the American delegation. Remember, the Biden administration all but severing ties with Russia after the launch of the full-scale war, as well as discussing relations. The other things on the agenda were talks about a potential summit between Presidents Trump and Putin and a potential end to the war in Ukraine.
Severe storms now blamed for 15 deaths across four states this week, the majority in Kentucky after flash flooding. The latest round of volatile weather taking aim at the south and west and testing the Texas power grid. And bone-chilling temperatures have moved into the Midwest and Northeast. The measles outbreak in West Texas now growing to 58 cases, jumping by 10 since Friday. 13 people are hospitalized. This is ABC News.
Local.